Hello and welcome to Holden Village. Today is August 5th, 1999, and in Koinonia Fireside Room this afternoon is Marion Roy Nielsen Svilsacker's session called The Enneagram in the Workplace, How Do We Work Together, number 99-8. Let's listen in.
This week it's the Enneagram Tool for Interpersonal Understanding. This is week 2, session 3, the Enneagram and the Workplace, How Do We Work Together? I'd like to begin just with a brief reading from Ephesians 4 and then a prayer together. I, therefore, the prisoner in the Lord, beg you to lead a life worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing one another in love, making every effort to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. There's one body and one Spirit, just as you were called to the one hope of your calling. One Lord, one faith, one baptism, one God and Father of all, who is above all and through all and in all. But each of us was given grace according to the measure of Christ's gift. Our calling begins at the time of our baptism. We are called as God's people. But within that very large calling, which is a life calling, is also our calling, our vocation, our work, be that in the home place, be that out in other places in the community. So the concept, the idea of calling, is something that we are in no matter where we are. And it is important to realize that our vocation, what we're doing in society, is also part of that larger calling to be God's people. Let us pray. Thank you, O God, for calling us in Jesus, for granting us your grace through holy baptism, for letting us be your people in the world. Help us to see, O Lord, our work, wherever our work may be taking place, as part of that larger calling to live as your daughter or your son. In Jesus' name, amen. Mary?
First of all, we need to know how many people brand new that have never been here before. Anybody? Oh, good. Did you get the handouts when you walked in?
Okay.
We'll try to do the review coming out with some different information and new information for those of you who have been sitting through reviews for now 2 weeks or almost. Poor Susan. Such a good student. The Enneagram is a personality typing system. Do those of you who are new know about Myers-Briggs? Is that familiar to you? It's like that in a sense, but it's different in the sense that Myers-Briggs tends to measure the way we interface with the world, and Enneagram tends to measure all the junk that goes on way down deep inside. And Myers-Briggs, which makes it much harder to get at. Myers-Briggs tends to have the theory, I'm okay, you're okay. And Enneagram has the theory, we have been given a great gift, we have also been given a great curse, and we live in that tension or that paradox.
Or to put it another way, you're screwed up and so am I.
Yeah.
Short form.
Short form, yeah. Or pathetic, or whatever word you want to use. So it's a bigger gulp. It's just a bigger gulp. But finally, if you have the courage to really dig in, really figure out your type. In many ways, it can bring you to that point of grace, that point where you know you need God in your life. Because to claim your Enneagram type is to claim that piece of yourself over which you are powerless. That piece over which you are powerless, that default mechanism that you just flop into time after time after time, whether you want to or not. And that's... That's hard to do because we spend our whole life pretending that isn't so, making it seem good, convincing ourselves that the way we are is the best way to be, rather than, you know, just our own defense mechanism. So the system is, it comes from a Greek word meaning graph of nine. Enea is Greek and, or is nine, and gram is graph. And it's structured like this. Yesterday when I drew the thing, I had dots all the way around, signifying infinitesimal number of dots around a circle. So nobody is in a slot. Everybody is somewhere, and there's all of these odd movements. Oh, we don't have our little arrows in. How would you like to draw in arrows while I'm talking?
Okay.
And so it's a very flexible system, and you can just, once you train your inner observer, that eye within that kind of notices what you do, most of the time the people around us notice what we do, but we're inside ourselves. We don't notice what we do, and we don't often even think about what we're doing. So when you start to notice what you do, you will notice, you know, how healthy or unhealthy you are within your type, whether you're sliding down to your stress point, whether you're moving into your security point, and all that kind of thing. So I thought what I would do is to go around the circle and run through all the different names that I haven't done this before, all the different names that people give for these different types. These names keep changing. As I mentioned in one class, every writer copyrights their set of names. So every new book that comes out by a new writer has to have a new set of names. And so it can get kind of confusing. And they put different slants on these people depending on who they are. So let's just go around the one sitting up here in this triad, which is the triad that has energy in the gut, deep energy, gut feelings, that kind of body energy, and has a core of anger, but these people do very different things with it. The one has been called the perfectionist, the need to be perfect, angry virtue, reformer, inspector. Any other names that any of you have run across in your reading? These would be people like, interestingly enough, Hillary Clinton and Ken Starr, both of them ones. You know, principled people in opposition. Al Gore, Mahatma Gandhi, and so on. Do you get an idea of what this kind of energy is like in a room? What these kind of people are like? They like to do things right, and they know what is right. The twos are the people who are called the giver, people who need to be needed, egocentric generosity, helper. Anybody else run into any other words in your reading? People like Mother Teresa, Desmond Tutu, the people who just need to be needed and love to give, love to help. Everybody in this circle loves to help, but these are the only people that need to help, you see. Other people help for other reasons, but twos need to help others. They know much more about what other people need than they know what they need themselves. Threes are called the performer, the people with the need to succeed, success through appearance, status seeker, people like Michael Jordan, Oprah Winfrey are both threes. They are very driven, very success-oriented, very good at doing what they can do.
Okay.
Pardon?
Would Bill Gates be a three?
No, we'll get to him.
Oh. He's coming.
He got good just because he happened to live at the right time.
He had the right idea at the right time.
He had the right idea at the right time, yeah. Fours are called the tragic romantics, the need to be special, seeking wholeness through pain. The artist, the author, that kind of melodramatic personality. Ingmar Bergman, Edgar Allan Poe, Bob Dylan. Does that give you some idea of the four energy for those of you who are new? Five energy, here we got Bill Gates, along with Albert Einstein, Doris Lessing. They're called the observers. They need to perceive. They seek wholeness through isolation. They're loyalists and facilitators. And they're in this thinking triad, and their gift is knowledge. So they are the people who know things. And the geeks, the nerds. Have ever you seen The Revenge of the Nerds? Very funny. Sixes are called the devil's advocates, people with a need for security, persecuted persecutors. Boy, some of these are kind of negative. Loyalist, facilitator, trooper, sometimes called. These are people that are given the gift of faithfulness, and fear and doubt sits at their core. People like Robert Kennedy, Gloria Steinem, Janet Reno, Jay Leno. Interesting differences there, isn't there? And yet all their energy comes out of the same kind of energy pool. These are all the head types. They have fear at their core. Thinking, and the people that just do a lot in their heads. Sevens, called the planner, the need to avoid pain, opportunistic idealism, generalist, optimist, and
glutton.
Yeah.
Enthusiast.
Gluttony, alas, is their core sin. But weren't you saying you loved enthusiast?
Yeah, that's a good word.
Epicure, they're sometimes called.
Adventurer,
sometimes called. Yeah, that's another word. Robin Williams, Carol Burnett, JFK, Steven Spielberg, all are thought to be sevens. Eights, sometimes called the boss, the need to be up and against something. They come on strong, leader, champion. What else?
Asserter.
What?
Asserter.
Asserter, is that one of the words you've seen?
Yeah,
asserter.
Protector.
Protector. And these are people with anger at their base, the people with the greatest access to their anger. These are the people that can just blow in a moment and be done with it, and you're just left in the waste, and they're just fine. So what's your deal, that I just screamed at you? People who are given power as their greatest gift and lust or excess as their curse. Examples, FDR, Donald Trump, Frank Sinatra, I did it my way, gold of my year, Indira Gandhi. Over here. Mahatma Gandhi over here, Indira over here. Interestingly enough. The nines are the people who are given the gift of peacemaking or harmony, and they have the curse of sloth. What?
Ronald Reagan,
yes.
He's a great peacemaker.
Yep. But Pete, he would
like to take a lot of naps, too.
He'd fall asleep in meetings.
Yeah.
Ingrid Bergman, Garrison Keillor, Abraham Lincoln, they think, was a nine. Great mediator, great peacemaker, with a lot of probably eight energy also in him. So these are the gentle folks. If you've gotten to the Bible studies in the morning, Dan Erlander claimed nineness the minute he heard the system. And I think that's fair, and all of his biblical interpretations come out of this nine place, he was talking this morning. How many of you were at the Bible study this morning?
Mary.
Oh, I'm talking too long. I'm sorry.
It used 15 minutes.
Okay. Oh, nine.
Sevens have a propensity to do that.
Keep me on task. So what I want to do is to take some of the examples that you people gave me and in the process of talking about them, explain some of the wings and arrows theory. The first one is yes. When my friend tells me what to do continually, I respond by withdrawing because I feel intellectually challenged. And then she says, I think I'm a seven and I think she's a six. So what is that all about? The key words here have to do with withdrawing, being put down. What happens when somebody tells you what to do, gives you advice? What's the message under that?
You don't know how to do it right.
Yeah. You're too dumb to figure this out for yourself. So sevens want to have a level playing field. They don't ever want to feel under somebody, less than somebody, not as good as somebody. And so when anybody gives them advice or tells them what to do, it's a one-up situation. And this particular writer is probably a seven with a six wing. Because a seven with an eight wing would probably respond with anger, not with withdrawal. You see how that goes? And also fear perhaps of blowing up and hurting the relationship makes this person withdraw instead of just saying, shut up, you idiot. I'm not going to listen to you, or whatever some other type might do. If the seven were in her really secure place down here at five, in security or in integration or in health, depending on what reader you're writing, people can slide, can go this way against the arrows. If the seven was down here, she may well take this advice as information and not as a put down. Because fives can take things as information. Oh, that's interesting information. You think I should do that? Oh, okay. It sits in their head. It doesn't feel like a put-down. If the seven is under real stress, they slide down here to one stuff. And they get caught up in real impatience or a need to be perfect. And what is it when somebody tells you what to do? They're saying, you're not perfect. And so if a seven is down here, any kind of advice is a statement that you're not perfect and it hurts. It makes you angry, it makes you frustrated, it bothers you, whatever. And so that's the difference in these arrows. So does that give you people who are new some idea about wings and arrows? That every personality type has access to energy on either side of them and energy on these arrows. So here it would be here, 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 here. Okay? Now let's look at another example.
One more.
But I have two more. Sorry. When my spouse answers questions that I ask to another person, I bristle and get quite upset. Now this person didn't do the because on that, and I want to use this thing to point out the importance of being able to listen to people's language. And I don't know what type this person is, but the words bristle, that's a one word. One's bristle. They just get just like stuck, gets at the back of their neck. Getting upset is a one word. If you look at why. If the writer had talked about why, is it because they were concerned that this was a put-down of the other person? You know, you ask somebody a question, and your spouse jumps in and answers it. It's a put-down of the other person, and I feel bad for the other person. That might be a tool response, do you see? If that interaction feels like an attack on your own authority, then it's kind of an anger eight response. If what's happening is that the spouse is raising himself up, I know more than everybody in the room, then the spouse may be, well, it could be any number of numbers, but it could be a three, because threes like to do that. They like to move themselves up the ladder. I just have to do this last one real quick, okay, please?
Who's your sister?
Yes. When my auto mechanic says there's nothing wrong with your car, I raise my voice and swear because he doesn't take me seriously because I'm a woman. Now, this was an interesting one to me because if my auto mechanic said there was nothing wrong with my car, I would kiss him. I mean, I live in fear that auto mechanics are going to find a trillion things wrong with my car that aren't wrong with it. And I don't know enough to know whether it's wrong or not. So it's an instant instant anger response. Now, where might that be coming from? It could be coming from what? Eight energy, couldn't it? And eights who are women are continually put down in ways that are really very frustrating because they come off with, they have power. I mean, they're given the gift of power. And in this culture, in a lot of cultures, people don't like women who are eights. It also could be a counterphobic six because it's a questioning of authority. And counterphobic sixes can be real butt up against authority. The car mechanic is the authority. He says something, I question him, I don't like it, I get angry. That could be a counterphobic six response. So, does that make any sense for how you can kind of look at yourself, look at your interactions, and look at your responses and get some sense of where you are on this whole thing? I'm done.
With the balance of the hour, we're going to talk about working relationships and see maybe if we can find ourselves and maybe some of the people with whom we work in the examples I'm going to use and in some of the comments I'm going to have. First of all, I need to have you envision a working relationship. Let's imagine that there are 9 people on the Salt Lake Olympic Committee. You know, the new one that's got more, the people that didn't abscond with the funds and all kind of that, things like that. Just if you would imagine that there are 9 people who volunteered to be a part of this working relationship to get this, the Olympics all set up. And I'm just going to give you some description of the people who volunteered, and you tell me which number you think it is. There was one volunteer who volunteered to be in charge of all of the ceremonies, the opening ceremony and the closing ceremony at the Olympics, the beginning and the ending, all of that work. And they would use various things to make it as attractive as possible. What number is it?
4.
It's a 4. Using the artistic kinds of abilities, and they would get pageantry and all of that kind of stuff, and very dramatic.
But I wouldn't have been able to feel that I was making a correct or adequate guess on the number until the very last few words that you said in order to make it attractive.
Okay, I'll try to be more expansive.
No, I was just wondering because I was thinking that maybe it was 3. Because it would elevate them to a position of authority.
Okay. You got a person who is going to, who has volunteered to take, since there are thousands of athletes who are coming from all over the world, this person has volunteered to take care of all of the housing arrangements
2.
And all of the food.
Two.
Yeah, amazing. Okay.
Put fluid on their bed.
That's right. Here's the, now, the third person has volunteered to do all of the work with the union people that are going to have to be involved, all the contractors they're going to have to bring in.
Nice.
They're going to, all of the powers that be.
8.
They're going to negotiate and they're going to say, this is the way we want to do it, you know? Okay. Then there are those who are saying, well, if we're going to have this Olympic thing come up, we've really got to have some, we'll have to establish the right protocol, the right standards in order to get this accomplished.
5. 1. 1. 1. 1. 1. 1. 1. 1. 1. 1.
One's always one standards, that's right. One's always one standards. Okay. Then you have another person who volunteers to contact the media, get the endorsements, get the sponsors, get all of the public funding, the private funding that's going to be necessary, going to make these things happen.
7. 3.
It's a 3. It's going to make the whole thing happen. And if you're going to have an Olympics, you've got to have all of these contacts out there, and you're going to work like crazy in order to see that all of these pieces are in place.
Meeting with every important person from every company.
That's right. That's right. If you're another person volunteers to be in charge of all the whining and the dining of people and the creating of Fun, yeah, seven. I didn't hardly get that out of my mouth, and you had that one pretty well taken care of. And another person has volunteered to take the orders from all of these other people and say, okay, you've got this idea, I'll do the training for this group and this group and this group, because we really want to make this organization run. We want to make this this institution work.
It's a six.
Sixes are good at taking orders and then implementing those kinds of things. They'll hear what the authority has to say, and then they will implement what the authority has to say, if they're maybe more phobic sixes than counterphobic sixes. Then we have somebody who says, well, let's see, I volunteer, there's going to have to be a lot of information we're going to have to collect. We're going to have to get all of this data put into computers. That's right. They don't want to work. They want to work alone, all by themselves, in some little room where they've got plenty of information, data, and all the computer system put together. And then you got somebody who looks at this whole thing and says, "Well, you know, I'll volunteer to help bring this whole thing together to iron all the problems, to work through all the difficulties with all you folks." And who is that?
Nine.
It's the chair of the committee. That's right. It's the nine. It's the nine.
And it's interesting that you don't put the people with power and the status-conscious people as
chairs. You put the people who are good at negotiating, good at mediating. Those are the ones who can bring all of the forces together that you want acting in concert, in step, in order to make this Olympics happen. So, well, just, hey, you did quite well on that. Those of you who have been here for a little while have begun to see where the energy source is for all of these different folks. Well, let's quickly go through and try to get a little glimpse of each one of these nine personality types in terms of work. And we'll start with ones. And I'm going to talk, at times I will throw out names, and basically these are members of my church staff, and these are people that work together and at this point are working together very well. And we have a church staff of about 20 people, and they've all taken the Enneagram, all had interviews with Mary, so we know what their types are, and it's just kind of interesting to see them at work day in and day out, and what kinds of things are important to them. The one who is at work is how many people have quality control as part of their organization? Anybody in charge of quality control in your organization? Yeah. Quality control people are one people. Okay? They want things well defined. They're going to get the best product out of this. They're going to know the guidelines. They're great in quality control. They're very practical people. They are people who can sit down and go step-by-step procedures. Somebody will give them an abstract idea, and they will put it into very concrete procedures, because that's the way they operate. They like to operate that way. Some years ago, somebody created an altar guild at St. John's Church. And I came from a church where the altar guild was, well, you know, sometimes they showed up and didn't show up, you know. Sometimes they took care of things and other times they didn't take care of things very well. I came to St. John's and discovered that the altar guild people, I mean, I didn't have to ask for anything. It was all done. Everything was in its place, exactly. It's unbelievable. Even in terms of funerals. I come, if we have a death and I'm going to have a funeral, I come to the church on that morning and Dorothy is already there. And Dorothy has done a number of things. She has managed to take the funeral pall and get it out to the narthex area, because that's where the casket is going to be, and she's going to put that pall on that casket. She has already placed the resurrection or the Christ candle right in the center, so that we are reminded of the resurrection that we are there to celebrate. The altar book will be ordered or open to the order for the service of death and burial. the programs will be put out, or the bulletins will be put out so people can pick them up. And when the right time comes during that service, at the conclusion of the service, that pall will be put on, and she will look and check to see that the corners are exactly straight as that casket's going to come down the aisle. And she will chide the funeral directors, who need a lot of chiding, I think, chide the funeral directors to make sure that that is exactly right. And when the service is over, and she's out there to take that pall off the casket again and fold it exactly, and if it's raining out, she will hand me an umbrella before I go to my car. This is a one. She has everything under control, and nothing is going. Yeah, this is the same too. Yeah, and nothing is going to go wrong. I mean, that's how. These are the guidelines. This is how we do things. This is the way it's going to go, and Dorothy is going to make sure it goes that way. You know, and it's great fun. I love it. I love to work because ones, you know, once they are in the guidelines, you know, once they know what they are, boy, they'll work like crazy.
But change the rules.
You know, change the rules on a one and you're in trouble, you see, you know. That's one thing you don't want to do, you know. And one thing you also want to do is you want to thank Dorothy. Because if you don't thank Dorothy, you're in real trouble maybe the next time around. Because Dorothy needs recognition for being so exact, for being so precise. She likes accountability. And Dorothy, as she works that way, or Nancy, who's one of the secretaries, not only do their work well, but they also know if you do your work well. They keep track of other people. They really do. They know when you're on time. And they know if you're 5 minutes late. You know? And if there's a particular thing that they that needs to be done, you know, they'll see, they'll observe whether you are doing your part to get it all taken care of. So make sure that you appreciate those kind of people. They will develop a perfect plan, or try to, as late they will in their eyes it will be perfect, and then they will proceed to execute that plan. Or have others executed in accordance with the perfection that they see that plan has. Oftentimes they have a difficult time giving work to other people. You might not do it as well as Dorothy can, or as well as Nancy can. And if you're doing a project and you mess it up, ones are very unlikely to pick up the pieces. They're not going to get involved in your mess. They're going to stay away from that. It wasn't my fault. Belonged at somebody else's doorstep. So the working with a one is very intimate because a lot of things get done, you know. And they're concerned with those guidelines. And don't try to do something by different rules. Because ones get bent out of shape. The way it's very clear cut, and boy, it's great working with a one when you understand that. Yeah, yeah. Well, let's look at anytime you want to ask a question, proceed to do it. Okay,
this is a one fast or slow. I mean, does it matter the speed at which they work? It's the perfection that's the issue.
It's the perfection that's the
speed.
Yeah, it's perfection that's the issue. Though most ones who work in places realize that there's always the time component. And so they will really, you know.
Are there any ones here that want to answer that?
Any ones that, if you're a one, maybe you want to talk.
It's really important to be efficient.
Yeah, efficiency is the word.
And well, I was going to comment, mm-hmm. One thing that you mentioned that I don't see is that if someone else does something wrong and it's not going to get done right, you won't step in and help.
You might have a two wing.
Step in to help to make sure it gets done right.
You might have a two wing, so you're going to take care of this for that person.
But what he was saying was that if the job is botched,
I don't want to. I don't want to have my name associated with that job.
Okay.
And so I'm not going to get mixed up in that. In that case. Okay.
Billy, does that sound true?
Yeah, but if it's early enough on, you might just take the job over.
Yeah, you might take it over.
I'm sorry. If it's going to be botched and you see that, you
just want to touch it.
That's right, that's right. But late in the game, you're not going to touch it. Late in the game, you're not going to touch it. That's for sure. Okay. Okay, let's look at twos. Okay? The twos, for a two, image, as we have talked about, image is very crucial for a two. The two is very dependent on the image that she or he communicates to others and that others see in him. And in the workplace, twos will most of the time align themselves with power and success. In other words, they may not be the boss of the situation, but they will manage to maneuver themselves into a particular place, often where they get the success that is going to come from that particular project. They can very quickly determine who has the power, who is the boss. And if it isn't them, I mean, twos are great behind-the-scenes people. Great behind-the-scenes people. But they also want the credit for being there when the boss is getting the credit from the congregation or from other people in the organization, and they want that known that, well, John helped me or Grace helped me. It's very, very critical for them. They want to have that kind of recognition because their image of themselves is dependent upon that kind of thing. So they often find themselves working for the important people in the group, in the organization, in the company, in the church. And they really try to please authority. They really do in the work environment. And they're never going to, or very seldom, are they going to take umbrage with the power. They won't do it alone. They may try to get other people. If they want to challenge authority, they may try to get other people to join with them, but very seldom will they do that alone. One of the interesting things about twos is that often they choose their work because their work has value for a loved one. In other words, their spouse or their significant other values that work and they will choose their vocation for that purpose, for instance. I'm the chair of a candidacy committee for Southeastern Iowa, and we have a pastor in the congregation who was ordained some years ago, who is a two, definite two. He was a farmer, doing very well. And all of a sudden he came over to ministry, and people are still scratching their heads because he's not a very good pastor. Ah, but then we discovered, when his wife applied to the candidacy committee, what she had had was already 7 years of experience learning how to do pastoral things at his side. And it was important for her that he had that position. And now she is actually coming before us to become a pastor. Sometimes people will get into a vocation because it pleases the spouse or the significant other in their life. If you have a confrontation with a two, it's usually over and gone very quick. Twos don't remember things. They get it out and then it's done. I had a situation where one of my former pastoral colleagues was a two, and we had some conflict. And I can still remember a couple of arguments late at night in the church hallway where we were going nose to nose with one another. And the next day it was fine with him. It wasn't fine with his spouse, but it was fine with him.
Question?
Yeah.
How does that work when their self-image is so tied into that external appreciation that it would be over? I would think that a two would brood.
They're very, yeah, they get devastated mm-hmm. by criticism.
Right.
But they manage to get over it. You know? They're brought low right now. Somebody punctured the balloon. They're brought low. But they manage to kind of do that. You know, in order to keep going in this job, I'm not going to lose the job. I have to then reorient myself back to that person who has authority or who has power.
And it's partly also because of the pride is the sin of the two. And a person with a lot of pride doesn't believe that they, number one, did anything wrong, and number two, could be hurt. You know, so they just talk themselves out of it.
Twos are not very strong in structure. Ones are very strong in structure. Twos are people persons. And they'll be totally oblivious of structure. My pastoral colleague who was a two, you could tell when he went into his office, there is no structure in this room. You know, there's chaos. There's no structure.
And yet two nurses can be pretty...
Yeah, two nurses, but...
unless the two has a one wing.
Yeah, one wing, yeah. Yeah, the two who was my colleague had a three wing, sure. And so it's the people thing that's important. When we would go into to do our regular our counseling with the Lutheran Social Service people, he always talked about him being a people person, me being a task-oriented person, and that was how he drew this distinction. Any other comments about twos? Any twos in here that would like to add some things to that piece?
What about guilt? Does a two take on guilt?
Yes.
Well, the two take on what?
Guilt.
Okay, yeah.
Tell us about it.
Yeah, sure, why don't you share that?
Twos, because they can perceive what the needs are, feel guilty when they're not the bucket for babe every time.
They
walk out of the dining hall, they realize there are not enough people volunteers, and they feel guilty, maybe they should do it more. I mean, that's just a little example.
It's because twos say yes all the time. They don't. No is not
so
part of their vocabulary.
They work to set boundaries, like, no, I need to set boundaries
that's
so
right.
other people take responsibility.
Right,
So the road to health is the road through guilt?
The road to health is to learn that guilt, that it's really false guilt.
Any other questions or reflections on two?
What about is self-confidence in the two?
Oh, yes, they can be very, I mean, and at times they can, as a support person, as the kind of the power behind the throne, you know, once they know who they are going to be, who they're going to please it, be pleasing in terms of the authority, they can have a great deal of self-confidence. Yeah. I can do this, and I will do this.
At least for me, I give the impression of self-confidence, and I might not have a clue what I'm doing.
Yeah. This is where their self-confidence goes awry. They get, whenever they start getting anxious over, what am I projecting? What are people seeing? It isn't what I'm thinking about myself. It's what are they seeing in me? That's what causes them the lack of self-confidence. Let's move on quickly to three. I'm not sure we're going to get through all nine of these, so I'm going to have to quickly. The threes are the people who get it done. Just do it. Let's go to work. They're not great innovators, but they are great at accomplishing what needs to be accomplished. You give a three a plan, and that three can go ahead and will figure out how it's going to be done, who's going to do it, when it's going to be done, we'll put a time schedule on it, it'll get done. Threes are the workers. They are really, and three, as I said, I think yesterday, or Mary said, is really a very strong personality number in American culture. That's where the emphasis is. Get it done. Get it done. Do it. They have a tendency to confuse themselves and their work. They're not very introspective. You know, my work is everything. My business administrator is a three. And she has no concept of hours. She is there forever. She'll deny with her last breath that she's a workaholic. But every time I come in the building, she's there. Because work, work, work. And you can see her doing some of her work. She likes that, that's why she leaves the door open. Okay? And she's very concerned with her own image in terms of what she is projecting. So, to the congregation. The congregation runs on Ruth's energy. And almost anybody in the congregation will tell you that. Who's in charge? Roy? Oh, forget it. He's not in charge. It's Ruth. Not great on ideas. We sit with committees. Other people have to come out on ideas in terms of implementation, getting it done. She's there. I can sit down. We have 150 congregations in our synod. And I can sit down at a synodical meeting and I can say to other pastors and that, do you know Ruth? I won't say her last name. And they'll say, oh yeah, she's the business administrator at St. John's. She has her reputation well established. Her like, people know her. She takes pride in all that she does. And that's what threes do. They want to be in charge. And they're good at being in charge. Hey, that's great.
I would guess that a lot of women threes become administrative secretaries. Mm-hmm. To powerful men, the people that just make a company run. I don't know that to be true, but you know, those kind of high-powered administrative secretaries in organizations, probably.
Yeah, where the administrator is maybe the figurehead, and the administrative assistant is really doing all the work. And threes are rarely absent from work. They don't miss a day. They're extra days. And if you come and talk to Ruth, if one of the support people, she's in charge of the whole support staff, and one of the support people comes to her and starts talking about, well, you know, I really didn't feel very well, and you know that, and I was somewhat upset yesterday, that's why I didn't show up in the afternoon. She has no sympathy at all. She doesn't see that. That's not part of who she is. You didn't show up for work. You missed 4 hours. We weren't able to accomplish something. So she has that. But when she looks within, that's a very difficult thing for her to do. She's so caught up in all of this, in that work. Her work is her. Some comment from threes, people who know your threes? Okay, let's look at fours. Fours, there never could be a four who lasted on an assembly line. Doing the same thing over and over and over. You gotta find unique work. I don't have any fours on my staff. But you gotta find unique things. So a four can be special. That's what I am. I'm special. Look at this, nobody else was assigned this. Nobody else can do it. They had confidence in me. They gave me this job. Ah, and use all the creativity in the world to accomplish it. Fours are marvelously creative and inventive people that can make things happen. If you want to have a presentation for your company or your company made to a big corporation, you get a four, and you will have such a marvelous presentation. It'll be unbelievable. They'll be dying to buy your product, you see. And it will be graphic, and it will be superlative. That's what fours do. That's who they are. They'll tell you that all the time. You know, we are really unique.
What do they do for work?
Huh?
What would be some professions that they actually could get paid for?
Head waitress.
Head waitress.
Oh, okay.
Now, who asked that question? At year one.
Promoter.
But you see, there's a sadness about them. There's also a sadness about them.
Musicians, they are often self-employed. They often don't last long.
That's right. They don't last. Yeah. There is this sadness. So they go also. I mean, there's a melancholy to fours, you see. And you will find fours as hotline counselors. You will find fours feeling sad about animals being killed, and the animal rights organizations have lots of fours.
Fours will find a way to be paid outside of outside
That's
of
right.
the traditional.
That's right.
They'll find a way to be paid for their uniqueness.
That's right. They'll seek it out. You won't have to seek out a four will find you. I mean, really, I mean, that's the way it is, you know. Because they're not concerned they're concerned with what's going on within them. not with recognition of here, what's going on in them, much more so. Any more comments about fours? Fives. Fives are great abstract thinkers. They can construct anything. They love data. They love to work alone. Give them a closet. They don't have to deal with anybody. Five would love it. It's terrific. I can do my thing with books, with the computer, with all that kind of stuff. I can get all this knowledge. I can use the data in the way that's important to be used. Facts are very important, you know. That's where the five excels, that knowledge. So if you've got a five, we've got a misplaced five. So we've got two fives on our staff, and one is misplaced. And we're trying to figure out a different position for her. Because, well, she was on the staff before I came, and she is out in front as the secretary who welcomes people. If you ever want a rude welcome, come to St. John's Lutheran Church in Des Moines. Kate will give you a rude welcome. You know, hello, how are you? Yeah, glad you're here.
They taught her the words. They can't quite. She doesn't
deal with the feelings because she only thinks she lives from here on up. You see, she's in this triad. This thinking triad, this head triad. A body? What's that? It's kind of like Jay Leno's, you know, head that bobs around, you know, that little shtick that he does, you know. On the other hand, I had another five who was one of my pastoral colleagues. Chris. His office is upstairs. All of our pastors' offices are upstairs. And you walk past his office most any time of the day, the door is closed. He's got all of his whole library there. Mm-hmm. He's got his computer there. His ideal day is don't disturb me. I'll study, I'll learn, I'll prepare, I'll do all this kind of stuff, but don't get in my hair. It's very interesting. And what kind of sermons do we get out of? We get very heady sermons, you know, out of Chris. He's a grand guy. Terrific guy, but his preference as a five is, leave me alone. I'll accomplish what I'm supposed to accomplish, but leave me alone. I've got my own pace, got my own time, and what you do is that you reward a five. The best way to reward a five is with some sense of privacy, because the five responds very positively to that. And you reward a five the time to pursue personal interests, not communal kinds of things. Because the five, so what does he do when he's not, what does he do to have fun? He bikes. Pretty good indication. I'm out there alone, you see, I do my thing.
Loves to teach theology.
Yeah.
Classes, Bible studies, yeah.
Don't get emotional about anything, though, with me. You know, that's the way it is. Don't get emotional with me. And fives are here on up, you see. They're disembodied. In fact, fives, sixes, and sevens, most of us are disembodied. Where are these head people? So give a five a closed door and a telephone. Great. As long as they don't have to be with you. They're okay.
Probably and they, better when the telephone doesn't work.
That's right. Yeah, they would appreciate it. You know. Only in emergencies or something. You know. Yeah, that would be very interesting. The six. The six is always struggling with authority. I'm a six, and I'm always struggling with authority. And lots of sixes in church. Most bishops in the ELCA are sixes. So authority is a big issue. And as those of you who know the church, authority is always a big issue. There are five sixes on my staff. They gravitate toward organizations. They like that community. They want to know who is the authority in the community. And if they like the authority, that's great. They can do, they accomplish a lot. Sometimes they are counterphobic sixes, in other words, pushing against the authority. And sixes have to seem to derive the most pleasure, or seem to be most alive when things are going wrong. Then they come to life. When things are going well in a parish, for instance, for me, that bores me. It isn't that I want to go and stir up trouble, but I don't get the energy for that. But have something, some adversity arise, and all of a sudden, all the adrenaline starts flowing, and I will stand up to the Pope if he shows his face. It doesn't make any difference. And sixes really thrive and really come alive under adversity. On the other hand, if you tell us, oh, that was wonderful, that was marvelous, we'll disclaim it. Because we really are not very confident. We don't trust even your best word to us. We're always suspicious. Did he really mean that? I wonder. You know? The disciples said to Thomas, we've seen the Lord. And what did Thomas say? Oh, I don't know. I don't think so. Not going to, you got to prove it to me. I got to see his, got to put my hand in his side. You know? Sixes are like that. Any sixes in here? Huh? Do you see yourself in any of this description at all? Yeah.
My guess is that there's a lot more sixes in here than you think.
Yeah.
I think they're all from Minnesota.
And if Mary gets too excited about something, she's the seven, you see. She gets too excited, I can usually find about five reasons why not to get quite that excited.
Or not to get excited at all.
Or not to get excited. So the sixes are all quite cautionary, in many cases, quite cautionary. We'll walk down the street, for instance, the two of us, and out of the corner of my eye, you know, I will see a car coming, you know, that's 400 feet down the block. If we're walking on a sidewalk, and you know, the side one slab of the sidewalk has heaved, so she might trip over it. I'll go like that because I see that. I see all of this stuff away. We're cautionary people. Mm-hmm. We'll be lying in bed at night. What's that sound? I mean, it happens all the time.
He knows every sound in the world.
Yeah, that's right. I do. Anyhow.
I've never heard of
them. Sevens. So often, sevens, they are filled with joy, of course, and they have a delightful time. They have a great, they have lots of wonderful ideas because they don't want anybody to ever close their options to them. That's freedom in having all of these options. You know, a six might want one or two options, and a seven will want 37 at a minimum. You know, that's just the way they are. Sometimes those options are very impractical. They don't always talk practicalities. Sixes talk practicalities. Fives talk practicalities. Ones talk practicalities. Sevens, what planet do they live on? I don't know. I don't know. Give them open-ended assignments. You know. Don't say you got to have it done by a week from next Friday. Sevens don't thrive well in that. You know, some of them do, but most of them don't. They're absolutely a delight to work for. Look at the people with whom you work, wherever you work. Who wins the popularity poll? It's a seven, I'll bet. They're the most engaging, you know. They've got joy. What are they going to do with the Olympic Committee? They're going to wine and dine the people. Absolutely. We don't like to look at the sad stuff. But there they are in the workplace, you know, and they bring, I have a seven. One of my other pastor colleagues is a seven. And I'll be, you know, in a stew about something, and Leanne walks through the door. All of a sudden, I can't be in a stew anymore. You know, there's a brightness, there's an uplift, there's just this sense of joy, you know. Our first service this fall is going to start at 7:45 in the morning. I'm not a morning person anyhow. And you know, but even now, the first service is 8 o'clock. So I show up a little before 7 o'clock, and she's always there before me. Hi, how are you? Great morning. And I want to just swear at her. But that's the way she is. She's just delightful. She'd get everybody's vote in the congregation for the most popular person on the staff. You work with anybody here, 7? Eight? Well, eights, they are natural leaders when they are secure. In stress, they cause lots of problems because they don't know how to deal with, in stress, they have a tendency to just, you know, cream you. And so they don't control themselves very well. They just have a tendency to go to extremes. So if you work with an eight who is secure, man, that is wonderful, wonderful power and wonderful leadership. They've got it together. But oftentimes, when they're not healthy themselves, some real difficult times happen. Eights are concerned, they're concerned with their livelihood, very matter of fact. Livelihood, give me security, give me good benefits. That's how you reward an eight. You don't have to tell an eight, oh, that was a nice job. Doesn't mean much to an eight. Show something specific. They're very materialistic. Reward me in some way, And don't wait to give me the gold. Don't wait to give me the gold watch after I've been here 25 years, either. Give me a promotion. Show me increase my salary. What?
Show me the money.
That's the way. But when they're not in good health, then they polarize people. You see, because they're very strong. You see, but not operating in good health, and they have a tendency to get into conflict, and they love conflict. And what people who are dealing with eights in the workplace have to do, you have to stand up to those people. Because otherwise they'll run over you, and run over you, and run over you. And you, the rest of us go like this. And the eight keeps coming toward us. Eight is afraid of nobody. And tries to exert that. Of course they're covering up their own vulnerability. An eight lives in a great deal of denial about being vulnerable. With an eight, it's my way or the highway. That's what it is. Frank Sinatra. And finally, nines. Are there any eights here that we know of? Any wannabe eights? You think Tom's an eight?
No, not an eight.
Oh, nine. You're
he's a nine.
He's a nine.
We have a good friend that's an eight, though.
Our oldest son is an eight.
Our oldest
you don't want to get in his face.
Amy's an eight.
Yeah, probably.
And the anger.
Yeah.
The anger is so forceful when they're angry.
Yeah. My son scared the hell out of me when I told him, and I was standing at the top of our stairs that went down to the basement, and this was back in the late 1970s, and I said, you can't stay here any longer because of your addiction. Either you play by the house rules or that. And I was scared out of my life.
Yeah.
I was. And I'm a counterphobic six, and I can look like an eight at times and do that kind of stuff. And the power in it.
Yeah.
Of course, it also had something to do with the fact that there's a third level black belt in Shotokan karate, but it's the whole power thing.
Yeah.
So, but you have to stand up to eights. Otherwise, they have a tendency. I mean, they don't know when they hurt you. You got to tell them. Nines. Nines want everything to be comfortable. Let's make it all smooth, no hassle. Oh boy, we're going to negotiate all this stuff. We're going to mediate this. We're all going to be happy. Oh boy, isn't that going to be fun? The nines' first word is yes. I'll do that. I'll do this. I'll do that. I'll merge with you. Yes, I can do that. Yeah, there's no trouble. No problem. Yeah, we'll do that. Sure. Yeah, The eight is no. Nine is, I'll do that, sure. And when the nine lives in an environment, a work environment, where there's positive support, man, alive, the nine does wonderful things in terms of work. Very, very productive. Has to know the guidelines. You have to keep even you need to encourage a nine in terms of, boy, you can do this, that kind of stuff. Get the projects out there so that they know that they can slide back in eight stuff. I have three nines on my staff, and they need the kind of positive reinforcement. I meet with them. One is in social ministry, and one is in congregational organizations, and they just they thrive when you support them. They can get slothful too. I have one member on the custodial staff who is a nine. Well, what are you going to do today, Larry? Oh, I don't know. What do you want me to do? Oh, okay. So I walk out of the room, and in comes my colleague, other pastor colleague, and says, Larry, what are you going to do today? Oh, I don't know. Well, Roy just said this, but is there something you want me to do? He's a great guy. I mean, he's a great guy, you know. But they need that structure. They need someone to really help them along. Otherwise, they when they're in stress, they really fall into sloth. They don't like to make decisions. But other people make the decisions. You tell me what to do, okay? Fine by me.
Two of our kids who are pastors are nines, and they both work on staffs and work beautifully on staffs because they just get along with people, and they don't need to have the power and authority, so they just work. Tom, you want to talk about nines?
It's interesting, putting nines in charge of things can be problems in some ways. I mean, if nines have to do something when the other... If you're in charge and other people, there's personnel problems, it feels real bad trying to deal with that.
Yeah.
If you worried about hurting people.
Yeah,
you have to be very affirming for a nine who's in charge of anything. The nine has to know the structure, has to know the authority, and has to know that you put her in charge of that. Then she or he can operate in that kind of system. But otherwise, it's really very, very tenuous for a nine. Do we have a few nines here? They love peace.
You bet. And they don't like change.
That's right. Keep this, don't trouble the waters, Bridge over troubled waters, they never like that song, No, they want the untroubled waters. Let's just keep it quiet. Well, I hope this has been helpful in terms of getting a little glimpse of what it is. And if you find out your own number, have a pretty good guess, and then see how, you start to think about people with whom you work.
Question.
Yeah.
When you hire a new person, do you consider what number they are, so see how they will blend in what strength you have?
Well, I think that from now on, we will intentionally. Uh-huh. Look at this, because it's really helpful. It's really helpful to me as the administrator to be able to know where is the giftedness of this person, and also where is the shadow. Because when you can see a person dropping, when my three business administrator drops and starts to close, this is the person who's going to accomplish everything, and starts to close herself off, and her countenance drops. And she gets a different haircut that is not nearly as nice in terms of trying to impress other people. I know she's going into a bad space. So to know where to put people, as I say, we still have a five. We're trying to figure out where she needs to go, because or where she can go, because she's not in the right place at this point.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think people are evenly spread?
No. They don't know that.
No, there's no statistics on that part. No statistics.
It takes. The groups that they work from are all. It's a self-selected group of people that are rich enough and have enough time to go to these things and be tested and.
It takes money.
But on a staff, do you want some of everybody or not really?
Well, let me just one problem that we have potentially on our staff. All of our pastors are in the head triangle. Chris is a five, I'm a six, Leanne is a seven. Now, that would be, who's going to care for the people? We don't even know we have bodies. But Jean McKinney, who is our parish nurse, is a two. And she can tell you, she goes in, I mean, every Friday she's over at the high rise across the street taking blood pressures and temperatures for all these elderly people. She is the advocate for, the advocate for elderly people. She develops a program for dual diagnosis kinds of things. She does things on sexual health. Jean, you know, is the key person in terms of ministry. You know, other people can do ministry. But she also created the Stevens Ministry Group. So all of that kind of support is built in, but it isn't in here in the pastor.
And you had to go to seminary.
That's right. And if you're a Lutheran pastor, you know, when you figure out, you know, what did you go to seminary for 4 years for? Well, so that I could preside at communion. I get a little sarcastic once in a while, because when you start thinking, you know, well, everybody, we have lay people in the pulpit, we have lay people doing this, but, and then all of a sudden the bishops get nervous. Oh no, don't let anybody else preside at communion but you. 4 years at seminary. And it's not even changing water into wine, you know. I mean, so I, you know, well, I have my own problems with structure, as you can see. I have an authority, that's for sure. I think
it's 10 after 6.
Oh,
huh? It's 10 after 6.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Tomorrow, Mary's going to do the session on parenting, and even if you don't have any kids, this will be so effective you'll want some.